Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback, our final live show of the week. We've got a great Sundays with Subscribers coming up. We'll talk about momentarily. On the show today, our criminal justice system is teaching kids that there are no consequences for violent behavior. What could possibly go wrong? Also, Trump's debate no-show. How did the other candidates fare? You'll hear from me on my opinion on that, but I also want to hear from you. Plus, just a day after we told you about Seattle hiring alternative first responders to not be armed and respond to mental health emergencies, a video emerges of exactly what could go wrong if that is allowed to happen. As I said, if you have not become a subscriber already, we do a great in-depth interview on the show every Sunday for Sundays with Subscribers. This Sunday, we have the superintendent of public instruction, the man in charge of our public school system, Chris Rakedahl, will be with us. So sign up, undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com is just $5 a month, and you get access to all those exclusive Sunday shows and more. We'll also have our monthly live Q&A coming up here in a couple days. So now is a good time to join. All right, I think we're going to flip things on our head. We never start with national news, but the presidential race impacts us all. And I just figured we'd talk about the first debate. I can't believe the debates happened so early, by the way. I'm like, oh, I need just a break. I think that there should be a rule that campaigns can only be a year long and the debates can only happen like 6 months out, but I digress. So anyway, it was interesting to watch. First of all, where's my phone? I got to pull up the rules. Fox News is acting like a little petulant child. Nicole will find this interesting too. So there's this lengthy, and I thought I was the only one who's going to be mad about this, and apparently like other media figures who do what we do are mad too. Fox put out this page-long set of rules about who can use their footage and how much of their footage of the debate you can use and how you have to refer to it when you're tossing to the footage. It's really crazy stuff. I've never seen this before. And I don't know if this is Fox like flailing and is trying to get ratings by just limiting everyone else's use of debate footage. And so they're giving all these crazy rules. So Nicole, I hope you counted because we can only use 3 minutes total.
Very strict.
And then after 7 days after the debate, we can never use it again. And then we have to put a little courtesy on the screen. And what is the line I have to say? Oh, okay. So before I introduce each of these clips, I have to say, in a debate on the Fox News channel, okay? Wow. Hey, I don't want to get sued by Fox.
Yeah, it's so funny because I thought, I mean, I just wonder where the fair use falls in to line here. Because
I think
if
you
they're
could
the
sue
only ones,
this.
I'm sure that I think they'll just take it down from wherever you put it up, right? So
yeah.
I don't know if they would pursue suing, but they would make you take it down, maybe.
And that seems very contrary to the spirit of debates. And what I was telling Nicole is this has never happened to this extent because usually, you know, each network hosts some sort of debate, and then you want to be able to, when it's not your debate, use the footage. And so everybody sort of plays fair and says, okay, yeah, use as much of the footage. And it has the Fox thing on there. So it's like, oh, you get your logo on CNN or MSNBC or whatever it is. So it seems really weird. Fox is maybe in a panic. We'll talk more about that when we talk about where Donald Trump was instead of at the debate. So in keeping with the rules, before I go through some of the moments I thought stood out, I want to make sure I've got my script in front of me that's been approved by Fox News for how I can toss these. But I thought, so there were a lot of post-debate polling where people thought Vivek Ramaswamy did very well. And I did think he had, first of all, he's a wonderful speaker. I think he's a strong debater. And this was really his introduction to the country. And he said something in his closing remarks in a debate on the Fox News channel that I actually thought was really good and kind of in line with the mission of this show.
I was born in 1985 and I grew up into a generation where we were taught to celebrate our diversity and our differences so much that we forgot all of the ways we are really just the same as Americans, bound by a common set of ideals that set this nation into motion in 1776.
And I think that sums up so much of what's happening in our country. And we talk about the purpose of the show, which is to reject false narratives that are meant to divide us. And that's what he touched on there. You know, he and I aren't that much different in age. I was born 3 years after he was. And so as far as presidential candidates go, he's very young. And he's talking about how, you know, we grew up and we wanted to be this generation that celebrated differences and put some of the mistakes of the past behind us. But we took it so far that we forgot that we have so much more in common than we do when it comes to what makes us different from one another. And I thought that was really spot on. However, you saw all the other candidates really go after him. And I think that's because he's been doing shockingly well in the polls. And so that's what you watch for on the debate stage, right? Like, who's getting attacked the most? And it was definitely Vivek. And there were some moments where I think that exposed his weaknesses and his weaknesses, you know, on foreign policy and his lack of experience in those areas. I thought Nikki Haley had a wonderful night, although some other talking heads disagreed. That's my opinion. And she, you know, being a former, the former UN ambassador, US ambassador to the UN, she hit Vivek hard on foreign policy in a debate on the Fox News channel.
Putin has said, if Russia, once Russia takes Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next. That's a world war. We're trying to prevent war. Look at what Putin did today. He killed Prigozhin. When I was at the UN, the Russian ambassador suddenly died. This guy is a murderer, and you are choosing a murderer over a pro-American country.
First of all, Mr. Ramaswamy, you have 30 seconds. Mr. DeSantis,
you know, Governor DeSantis, I wish you well in your future career on the boards of Lockheed and Raytheon.
You know, I'm not on
but the fact of the matter,
and you know,
Boeing came off of it, but you've been pushing this lie. You've been pushing this lie all week, Nikki.
You want to go and defund Israel? Yes. You want to
okay, let me address that. I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm going to address each of those right now. This is the false lies of a professional politician. There you have it.
So the reality is, America less safe. You have no foreign policy experience, and it shows.
And you know what? The foreign policy experience that you all have shows in the pointless wars we've got.
The audience like Nikki. The audience like Nikki, and I thought that was strong. And I don't love candidates shouting over one another, but I think that when you're her, you're the only woman on stage. You don't want to be pushed around. And so I think her trying to, and then making her point at the end, the audience loved, I thought Nikki Haley had a good night. I was once a huge Nikki Haley fan. And then she sort of flip-flopped all over the place on Donald Trump. And I'm like, just pick either you like him or you don't. You're with him or you're not. I don't care which one you choose. Just be consistent. And she just couldn't be. But I thought it was a good night. Ron DeSantis, he was fine. He was fine. I'll talk about this with my sister coming up in Florida Report. But, you know, he's been flailing in the polls. And I thought he had a strong performance. I didn't see any huge standout moments, but I thought the interesting thing was nobody was really attacking Ron DeSantis. And I don't think that's the place you want to be. You want to be the one being attacked, because if you're not, that kind of shows to me that they don't think you're as relevant, maybe, as Vivek, who they attacked hard. But DeSantis did have some strong moments, particularly there was this debate, you know, on the stage and the questions about aid going to Ukraine versus aid or money, not aid rather, but money and funds at our southern border. And I thought that DeSantis's message on that was strong. Here's what he said in a debate on the Fox News channel.
Not a territorial dispute either.
As President of the United States, your first obligation is to defend our country and its people. And that means you're sending all this money, but you're not doing what we need to do to secure our own border. We have tens of thousands of people who are being killed because, well, we're not handling both. And so I am going to declare it a national emergency. I'm not going to send troops to Ukraine, but I am going to send them to our southern border. When these drug pushers are bringing fentanyl across the border, that's going to be the last thing they do. We're going to use force, and we're going to leave them stone cold dead.
Stone cold dead. Well, he was asked about lethal force. Okay, I want to play one more clip from the debate. We'll talk briefly about Trump, and then we have a lot of local news to get to. But I thought it was a really interesting moment when, of course, Trump's turning himself in Georgia today. So it's sort of hard to ignore that elephant in the room and the fact that he wasn't on stage. And the candidates were asked in a debate on the Fox News channel whether they would support Donald Trump if he's the nominee.
You all signed a pledge to support the eventual Republican nominee. If former President Trump is convicted in a court of law, would you still support him as your party's choice? Please raise your hand if you would.
So what's really funny is you've got, so everyone but Asa Hutchinson raises their hand, but it was Chris Christie, Ron DeSantis, and who was the other
Pence.
One? Pence, Mike Pence, sorry, who... The other ones raise their hand right away, and then they're sort of like judging the temperature of the room, and then I guess, and then Chris Christie just gives sort of this half hand raise, which, look, to me, they kind of have to say that because you've pledged to support the eventual nominee, and if you're the eventual nominee, you want people to support you, right? So it would look a little hypocritical for you to take that pledge because you want people to do it to treat you that way if you're the nominee, but then to say, yeah, but not Trump. So I think they kind of have to. At the same time, they just got done, most of them, and they do regularly on the campaign trail, bashing Trump, saying he shouldn't be president, all these things. And then they're like, yeah, but I'll support him. And to me, it's just the poison of party politics, which is like they're not allowed to be their own individual person, to have their own opinion about something, somebody in their party, whether they want them to be president or not. They have to sign some dumb pledge. And then even though they're being completely disingenuous, raise their hand on the debate stage. But I thought it was really hilarious. The ones who had to wait felt like forever. Check the temperature of the room, raise their hand. Okay, again, really quickly, we'll just touch on the fact that Donald Trump wasn't there, and he did a pre-taped interview with Tucker Carlson for his show that goes out on Twitter, which has like 250 million views, which is way more than the Fox News debate will have garnered. And I think it's this interesting period of time, but let me just play the opening because I thought it was funny. I was like, these guys are so, they're like older men and they're trying to be social media savvy, but it was just a little awkward.
It's debate night, but we're not in Milwaukee.
Awkward stare at the camera. But anyway, I can't knock the guy. I mean, you have Tucker Carlson, who got fired from Fox News. You have Donald Trump, who Fox News has kind of flipped on him a little bit. And now they're taking all this attention away from the debate. And Donald Trump, of course, was asked off the top by Tucker Carlson why he did not participate.
Why are you at the Fox News debate tonight in Milwaukee?
Well, you know, a lot of people have been asking me that, and many people said you shouldn't do them. But you see, the polls have come out and I'm leading by 50 and 60 points. And, you know, some of them are at 1 and 0 and 2. And I'm saying, do I sit there for an hour or 2 hours, whatever it's going to be, and get harassed by people that shouldn't even be running for president? Should I be doing that? And a network that isn't particularly friendly to me, frankly. You know, they were backing Ron DeSanctimonious like crazy, and now they've given up on him. I mean, it's a lost cause.
I just got to believe that Fox is like, oh, they've got their old shining star who used to bring all their ratings in for them. And Donald Trump has always been a ratings gold for the networks. And they're on the same day, same time as the debates, putting out this thing that's got 250 million views. And that, honestly, that underscores why we do this. When you look at the direction things are going with media, and the mainstream media, corporate media is floundering and failing, there's a lot of good reasons for that. There's some reasons out of their control, like they have, well, I guess not out of their control, they haven't kept up with the way that media is going, and social media, they're doing things the same way they were doing them 20 years ago, and it's going to be their death now. And we didn't want to sink with that ship. I will also note, before I move on, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, I had to mute the TV when he was on, because you know when you get secondhand cringe? I was like, oh, he's either really nervous or just not a good public speaker. I had secondhand cringe.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't belong there, it seems like. And yeah. I feel like at that point, you're just doing it for the attention because you want to be considered for whatever in the future. And it's embarrassing.
I don't think he's a bad guy. It's just really was ill-prepared for a debate stage. Wasn't good.
For that crowd.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up next, there has been a slew of acts of teen violence and also a story that just proves that the criminal justice system is teaching these kids to be entitled, even when they commit heinous crimes. We'll discuss. The sheriff of Thurston County, Derek Sanders, is going to join us. But first, I've been preaching to you guys, if your budget is stretched thin because gas prices have gone up, the long-term care tax, please take some time to do the First Mark Challenge. It doesn't cost you anything, and it can save you hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year. Essentially, what the First Mark Challenge entails, Mike and I went through it ourselves. We're now members of the First Mark family. You schedule some time to do a Zoom call with First Mark. You go through your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs. Everybody needs insurance, home, auto, whatever else you have. And they'll go out for free, shop the market for you, come back to you with recommendations, and you can decide, okay, do I want First Mark to handle my insurance or not? Here is Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the first mark challenge is.
Yeah, and at the end of it, maybe they come back to you and say, actually, you've got really good insurance at a great value. We recommend you stay with what you already have. And then you've learned a lot in the process and you're kind of back where you started, but you got some valuable information. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, check them out, take the First Mark Challenge. They work for you. Okay, we gathered some headlines today of just a small fraction of the crimes that have been happening in our area that are allegedly committed by juveniles. And we've known, and there's been this sense of this growing feeling that you have juveniles participating in, engaged in more crime, more violent crime. And I think a system that's really not holding them accountable in a way that is going to put them on a better path forward. So I'll just tick through a couple of the headlines. Two teens arrested in Tacoma after a police detective was shot, one of them accused of shooting a police officer in Tacoma. Let's see, this one out of Seattle. Four juveniles attempt to elude SPD in a stolen Kia. This one also out of Seattle, a 16-year-old arrested for Lake City armed robbery. Gosh, you think about that, 16. What were you doing at 16? Not armed robberies, I imagine. Let's see, this one out of Bothell, teen killed in a Bothell gang shooting. How many headlines do we hear like that? And then just on the show yesterday, we talked about this hit and run, stolen vehicle, fleeing from police that occurred with what turned out to be a car full of six kids, five of them juveniles, one of them 18 years old, and then a judge just let the 18-year-old off scot-free. So we wanted to dive a little bit more into that case today and talk about really the message that it sends to youth. Let's get to it. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, in that video that we played for you guys yesterday, and we're going to revisit today, part of that was actually the body camera footage from the sheriff of Thurston County, Derek Sanders. So he gets the call, he responds to the scene where this vehicle stolen by these youth. We believe it was stolen out of the Tacoma area, and the youth were kind of from that area as well. It hits another vehicle, flees the scene, driving erratically down the highway. Pit maneuver on the vehicle is done. They flee into the woods. You know, they go and they find three of these kids in a porta potty. And then the 18-year-old who's driving the vehicle, a judge says, we'll cut you loose without any bail. Just wild stuff. So we wanted to have Thurston County Sheriff Derek Sanders on the show today to talk about what happened in this case and also the deep frustration that more isn't being done to hold these young people accountable. Sheriff Sanders, welcome to Undivided.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm curious, are you always out on the road like that, or did you just stumble upon that vehicle?
So I didn't stumble upon it. That was actually my sergeant who was in the right place at the right time. But I'm usually lurking around, listening to the radio, waiting for the good stuff. And I don't have any issues interjecting.
Yeah, lurking around. That's funny. Yeah. So how often are you guys dealing with, because I guess when we think of things like this and how it all played out, and we'll get to the no bail situation, I think of those things like King County, maybe Pierce County. But how often are you guys dealing with stuff like that?
Pretty routinely. We don't deal with a whole lot of violent crime in Thurston County. A lot of our stuff is domestic violence. That's most of our violent crime, mental health, drug abuse, and property crime. So we do deal with a lot of stolen cars. But yeah, not usually the car packed full of six people stolen type cars. I mean, the TikTok challenge stuff has changed the game quite a bit for us with the Kias and the Hyundais.
Yeah, where people, and if you could just explain that to folks. So basically there's some TikToks out there that show you how to steal those vehicles in particular.
Yeah, they're susceptible to auto theft based on an issue with, I think it's within their ECU, their computer, because people are basically tearing these cars apart and starting them with a USB cord hooked up to a phone. So and TikTok, you know, very influential to our youth. It started this challenge for our youth of, you know, how fast can you steal a Kia? And, you know, that was our second Kia theft recovery with juveniles in 1 week.
Yeah. And the car was stolen out of where?
The car was stolen out of Tacoma. And the juveniles were from all over the place. I think we had some in Pierce and King County.
Yeah. So we've seen the video, obviously, but just take us through the highlights of what these youth did and kind of up to the porta potty moment?
Yeah, there was there's packed full of one adult driver and some kids, and then they get into a hit and run. The victim chases them down this rural road, and it just so happens that one of our sergeants who just signed into service was parked just down the road, sees the Kia on the oncoming lane, gets into a pursuit with it. The vehicle flees. The victim pulls over. The other vehicle takes off predictably. And then as they were starting to get into a more densely populated area, the city of Tumwater, our sergeant took a pit after the vehicle crashed. And one of the occupants fled. The other two go into the woods. There's actually six total, and all but two of them were kind of trying to leave the vehicle. So you can imagine one of our sergeants is dealing with six people in one car. And we don't know they're juveniles. We don't know how old they are. We just know there's six of them. And so that was when I was listening to the radio, and I started that direction as well. And we started the canine that direction. And thankfully, we got help from the city of Tumwater because there were almost as many juvenile suspects or suspects in total in this car as we have deputies working in the entire county at one time. Six suspects, eight total deputies spread across 750 square acres. So at that point, we got a perimeter set up. I hopped in with the dog. And then as we were going, the dog was kind of taking us past that area because, you know, the scent, the dogs are tracking the scent, but it's windy and the scent's getting blown all over. And I saw the porta potty with the red locked occupied. I'm thinking to myself, you know, can you lock a porta potty from the outside? That'd be kind of weird. And I'm like, hey, you guys need to come back here. We got something here. And then when the dog started barking, they opened the door. But we were pretty surprised to find three suspects all in one porta potty. Usually that's got enough room for one person.
Yeah, we had some commenters.
It's packed. It was just me inside of it. So.
Yeah, we had some commenters saying you should have kicked that thing over, but I would have felt really bad if it wasn't the suspects and it was just some guy.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine this poor guy is just, you know, getting his car fueled up and really had to go. And
yeah, not cool. So we'd have obviously had some issues because of state law and changes with even being able to pursue. So what was it that allowed your sergeant to pursue the vehicle in the first place?
Yeah, when I got elected, I immediately changed our pursuit policy to allow the pursuits of DUIs in accordance with state law. And so it was the erratic driving pattern, the driving into the oncoming lane, blowing stop signs that led our sergeant to believe that the driver was intoxicated. And so they used that reasonable suspicion to initiate that pursuit.
Gotcha. So you'd mentioned earlier juveniles and one adult, but we're talking about an 18-year-old, right? So yeah. A pretty young adult. So you guys make this arrest. I mean, all these resources that went into this, the hit and run, you know, the flight from justice. What did you expect would happen in court with that 18-year-old?
I expected a low monetary bail, frankly. I recognize he's 18, so probably no adult criminal history, if any. And I expected a low monetary bail. I mean, these people do not live here. And, you know, the courts have very specific rules when they're going through these things, right? Is the risk of committing another violent offense, obstruction of justice, are they at flight risk? And then under that, they have all these subcategories, like how many failure to appears do they have in the past, all these different things. And so while I recognize that maybe they don't have any adult criminal history, just a couple of things. First, obviously, the person's not on a good start. If they're just 18 and now they got, you know, five juveniles in a stolen car fleeing police, and they're already not off to a good start. And on top of that, they don't live here, right? So what you're really trying to tell me is that we think that someone who doesn't live here is fleeing from the police in a stolen car, I'm going to presume they don't own a car then, is now going to what? Pay for a Greyhound ticket to come back to court in Thurston County to face the consequences of their actions. And again, you watch the video, this is the person who's yelling and screaming at us and acting entitled like they shouldn't have ever even been arrested. How dare you chase me? How dare you, you know, conduct a pit maneuver on my stolen vehicle and damage my stolen car?
Lay down. You're fleeing from a stolen car. I'm going to leave it aimed at you too. Be quiet.
Point that shit somewhere else.
No. Hands. You two got hands. So start. You can start with the mouthy one here on the left.
That entitlement, all of these things leads us to believe, obviously, that this person's probably not coming back to court. So it's the jury's still out on that, if you will.
Yeah. So the judge lets him go without any bail, without any sort of monetary promise to appear. What message does that send to, I guess, criminals and to the people of your county?
When people recognize that they will be booked into the jail and immediately released, the message is that, oh, not bad. I'll go find my next Kia. And it's, I think it's a huge hit. I mean, there's multiple victims in this case. You have the initial victim of the auto theft, their car's totaled. You have the victim who the stolen car crashed into, their car's damaged. Our patrol vehicle's out of service. The entire right side of the car is damaged because they tried to drive forward, and we don't know if that vehicle is going to be totaled. So you have multiple victims here, and for just a PR, you know, no need for monetary bail. I expected just a little bit, something to convince this person to put money up to come back to court, come back to Thurston County and face the consequences of your actions.
Yeah. I guess when you look at this in its totality, you know, we talked so much about the misguided pursuit law that was passed in 2021. They fixed it, but just a little bit. But, you know, you had enough because of decisions you made to be able to at least pursue this vehicle and arrest people, which isn't always the case. It's not always able to happen. But you do that, you put in all the work, and then this is the outcome of it. I guess just from the position of an elected sheriff, what do you think it's going to take to change the course of things when it comes to public safety and just some of this really common sense stuff?
I truly don't know. I was really disappointed. So when the laws changed in 2021, we saw a number of things happen. We saw an exodus of police officers. We saw morale go down. I was one of the deputies who decided, okay, well, the message is clear that you guys really don't want us doing much. You really just want us to drive around in circles. And when people commit crimes or flee, to kind of just move along with our lives. So that was an issue already. But then now we're getting to the point where when I got elected, I anticipated that with all the statistics that we have that show, you know, the 62% increase in auto theft since 2019, murders are up 96%. In that same time frame, police officer staffing across the entire state is down 100, despite 100,000 new people in our state. I thought bringing all these statistics to our legislature would be the light bulb of like, yeah, this wasn't the right way. We went down this path, we tried it, right? Hey, we made an effort. We tried to make some reform changes, but this was one of the ones to watch the legislator dig their heel in and make an excuse as to why all of these things are occurring, right? Like no one else is seeing those explosions and homicides and auto thefts and all these different things. So that's been, I guess, the most challenging part is I really thought the common sense side would take over. Like you can definitely see how these are both correlated together. They're tied in together. You can't blame the national model on the small increase in crime we're seeing nationwide on the explosion in Washington state. So when we see this stuff, I mean, it's not a secret. Every day that I do sign into my computer, I get the delayed messages from the day before and, you know, 10, 15 auto thefts in just Thurston County that we're putting out as BOLOs every day. I can't even imagine what King and Pierce are looking like in Snohomish, the bigger counties. So I don't know what it's going to take. I guess the numbers are going to have to get higher. But if we continue down this road, it's already bad enough, but if we're also not even going to require that people put up small amounts of securities in exchange for a promise to return, then I can only anticipate that this is going to continue, that we're going to continue to see the rash of auto thefts. And yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I guess the one thing I will say, and this is what I don't understand, is that, you know, if I were a judge, this is just plain old citizen here thinking, if I'm a judge, really, a lot of what I'm doing is guesswork, right? I'm trying to guess on whether or not this person is going to commit another offense on pretrial because they're presumed innocent, so they've not been convicted of anything. Yeah. But I'm trying to guess if they're going to commit another crime and if they're going to show up to their future court dates. What I'm trying to figure out, right, is as a judge, if you guess that someone is going to come back and not commit a future offense and they violate both of those things, do we view that as a failure systemically? And should we? Should we consider that a failure, right? Like, I mean, it's like the weatherman saying it's going to snow and it's 100 degrees outside. And so that, I guess, is the big question that I have for courts across our state, across our country, is that we're trying to make the best decisions possible. But if we're continuously getting them wrong, is that a failure of the system? Because to me, a bench warrant is a big deal. Someone has defied our magistrate and it was our job to go get them back. But we also don't want to see that continued disrespect to continue.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think there's a lot of focus on what politicians are doing in Olympia, a lot of focus on what police are doing, and I just don't think there's enough focus yet on what's happening on the judicial side of things and where is the follow through. You know, on the show, we've talked about cases with recently with sweetheart plea deals for violent offenders. You know, the bail issue is a problem in multiple counties, not just in this one instance in Thurston County. So I think you're right. There needs to be more of a focus on that. And as far as when things are going to turn around, all we can do is just keep pushing common sense and having people people like you on. So, Sheriff Derek Sanders, we appreciate it. I want to know if the canine got a treat of any kind.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the canines get their little chew toy at the end. So they're driven, and then at the end they get their little tug, and we play around with them and let them know they did a good job.
All right. Well, don't break. What's the dog's name? Issa, you said?
That's canine Issa. Yep.
Okay. Don't break it to Issa that the judge cut the guy loose, because Issa will just be out trying to track him back down. So.
yeah. Issa's a good pup. So.
All right. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate the sheriff's time, and I agree with him. Like, what is it going to take? If we haven't reached that point yet, I'm terrified to think what it would take for people to start making different decisions about who they send to Olympia to represent them. Particularly, I think what we're seeing lately is who they send to the governor's office. I mean, you have so many, and I don't know if this specific judge was an Inslee appointee. I'll have to look into that. But I think you have a lot of judges, including in stories we talked about last week, who, you know, they've been appointed by the same governor of the same party for 12 years now. And at what point do we decide that we need someone in that office who is going to appoint judges to vacant positions who really care about law and order, really, really are concerned with the safety of you and I and our families and our communities. So I don't know what it's going to take, but we are going to keep trying with every fiber of our being to bring a little common sense and sanity back to some of these decisions into politics in our state. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And while you're there, make sure to sign up for their newsletter so you can look for opportunities to turn your frustration into action. All right, there is this unbelievable body camera footage from the Seattle Police Department that shows them responding to a residential burglary. What they found when they went into the victim's garage is unreal. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. So I'll just set the story up for you. Here's the headline from Fox News. Seattle police arrest burglary suspect found chugging gasoline in victim's garage. So there's a 17-year-old who's home alone, and she sees a guy with a ladder and a gas tank, gasoline can, walking through her backyard. This guy breaks a back window. Again, 17, she's home alone. So she runs, hides in her parents' closet, calls police. Police show up at the house, and here's the body camera footage of what happens next.
Yeah, I heard banging sound. You got it, buddy. One more. Got it. Seattle police, we're checking inside. Make your presence known. No, garage.
Hey, I'm in the car.
Hey, get your hands up now. Get them up. Leave them. Leave the hands in the air. Keep your hands in the air.
In the garage.
Do it now.
So I see him in the victim's vehicle.
Hey, put it down. Put it down. Put it down.
Put it down. Put
chugging
it down.
Gas.
He's got a hammer in his left.
Hey, one, keep legal. Open the door. Open the door right now.
I got him. He's in the car now. In the car now.
Open it now.
Open the door or we'll bust it open. Open the door, we'll bust it open.
Open the door.
Now.
I don't want a problem, John. All right, you ready? Put your hands
down,
drop it!
Stop this guy if you're just listening to the podcast. Stop him from chugging gasoline as quick as he can. Rip him out of the car.
Roll over. Roll over.
I mean, that's unbelievable. And I was reading, so we just got, just now, from the King County Prosecutor's Office, the charging documents. They just charged this guy and also sent out some other crazy photos from stuff that he brought in with him, like a board with hammer or with nails sticking out of it, really weird stuff. So they just charged him with one count of residential burglary. His name is Christopher Abbott. And I don't see at first glance any mention of mental health issues, but again, I have to believe that to sit in a car and chug gasoline and his behavior, I have to believe there's some mental health issues involved. But get this, and the prosecutor's office only asked for $20,000 bail on this guy, and you're entitled to reasonable bail, and maybe they think he's indigent, he doesn't have enough money to come up with what he would need to come up with in order to get out. But he's got, in the charging documents, it says the state has community safety concerns based on both the facts of the case, obviously, and the defendant's violent history. He has a violent history out of Texas. He was convicted of assaulting a family or household member, also has a conviction for assault to another family member, maybe the same one, and he's got various other things, and again, out of Texas. And so he's got this violent history, breaks into this house, allegedly, where there's a 17-year-old home alone, you know, brings all this stuff with him, who knows what he was planning to do, and then he sits in a car and chugs gasoline until police physically pull him out of the vehicle. And all I could think about as I watched this is, yeah, that's why it's not going to work out, as we talked about on the show yesterday, for Seattle to hire non-armed first alternative first responders. I mean, obviously this is a residential burglary case, so this is always going to be something that police would be dispatched to. But you see the type of danger that people who are, again, I'm making the assumption based on all the available evidence that someone who's in the throes of a mental health crisis, all the dangers that they pose. And I just can't imagine that there's going to be an awful lot of mental health crises that we can send someone to, truly send someone to, who is not armed without some sort of accompaniment of a police officer nearby. So it's just wild stuff. But again, and we'll reach out to the prosecutor's office and try to get a sense of, is this someone who you want to send in for a mental health evaluation? Because clearly they're a risk to themselves, and that's one of the factors, right, for an involuntary commitment, is are they a danger to themselves or to others? I would argue that both is true, but they have to believe that there's some sort of underlying mental health issue. But the question is, well, what would our state even do for them if they do have some sort of mental health issue? There was, and this is actually, I think, awesome news, although I have some questions about it. I don't know if you guys saw this, but 22 counties in our state, 22 counties have filed a lawsuit against the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services. And it's over this very issue. Although I laugh because King County is one of them. And I'm like, okay, you guys have contributed to this too. But there's a variety. So there's like almost all the counties in our state. So 22 counties. And it says, in the lawsuit, I just want to read part of it. It says, the Department of Social and Health Services is failing this fundamental obligation by refusing to provide mental health services to conversion patients. So those are people who they enter through the criminal justice system. They have to be converted over to the civil side because they have a mental health issue that needs addressed. It says, by ignoring the dictates of the legislative and judicial branches, DSHS is depriving a particularly at-risk population of the opportunity for necessary mental health treatment to the detriment of both patient and well-being, patient well-being and community safety. In the face of DSHS's continuing contempt for both legislative and judicial authority, Washington counties have joined in an unprecedented coalition to enforce DSHS's legal obligation. And then they talk about what DSHS is or is not doing. They say DSHS has conceded that state law requires it to admit civil conversion patients for evaluation in order to determine whether additional civil commitment is warranted. In each case, DSHS's obligation to conduct an evaluation is ordered by the Superior Court. Nonetheless, DSHS has selectively refused admission to civil conversion patients since at least December 2022, and on information and belief has refused to admit any civil conversion patients for statutorily required civil commitment evaluations since July 13th of this year. So you have, again, unprecedented 22 counties in Washington state who are suing the State Department of Social and Health Services for failing to adequately hold up their legal obligations when it comes to dealing with severely mentally ill people who have or are suspected of committing a crime. And we wonder why stuff like this is happening. And we wonder why Seattle police officers are responding to 10,000 calls of people in crisis every year, so much so that now the city has to hire alternative first responders to deal with those very issues. And we wonder why we have repeat offenders who are in and out of the criminal justice system and in and out of the King County Jail 100 times because they have a mental health issue and then they're sprung out. Nobody helps them. They just wind up back on the streets doing what they were doing before. This is truly a state-level issue. It is a failure of Governor Jay Inslee. He has been in office for 12 years. The Western State Hospital lost its federal accreditation under this governor, and nothing meaningful has been done to fix it. And Bob Ferguson, if he's governor, it's just going to be the same old thing. Bob Ferguson has been attorney general. He could put some pressure on the governor to fix this. Is he? No. So this is truly, I think, if we can get our mental health system under control, we're going to see fewer crazy videos like the one I just showed you with the gas-guzzling residential burglar. And we're also going to, I think, have a meaningful market increase in the feeling of sense and security in our communities if we can deal with people who are mentally ill in an effective, efficient way. So maybe this lawsuit from 22 counties is going to be some sort of come-to-Jesus moment for the Department of Social and Health Services, although if there's a finding against them, that money comes from us, so it's sort of a bummer. But we will track this, see what happens with this lawsuit, and see what, if anything, that department is ordered to do to fix the problem. All right, coming up next, we will dip outside Washington State, check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State in our segment Florida Report with my sister. But first, we've been talking about Sell with Wes. If you're in the market to sell your home, if you're even contemplating it at this point, I highly recommend checking out sellwithwes.com and seeing what our friend Wes Jones and his team can offer you. One of the things they have is the Listing Boost Concierge Service. That means if you need some upgrades to your home, some work done before you can even put it on the market because you know you won't get a good price, if you don't, Wes and his team can handle all of it. That's what they did for Susan in Federal Way, who called Wes Jones when she was ready to sell her home that she'd lived in for 25 years.
I knew I had to paint. I knew I needed to get new flooring. I needed to get new lighting. I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. Work started immediately. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. Come on, people, that was one call. Susan made one call, and she got $200,000 that she otherwise wouldn't have because she decided to call Wes Jones. Love it. Love to hear it. So check out sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. You can start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, as always, a lot happening all the way across the country in the Sunshine State, including a really sad story about a famous whale there that was going to be shipped back here to the waters outside Washington State that has unfortunately passed away. So let's get to that and more in our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda. Hey.
Hey.
Hey. How do you think your governor did last night?
Average, I think, about what I expected out of him, to be honest. I mean, sometimes these debates are like just reruns from the debates of previous presidential elections, people talking over each other and just trying to get their, you know, their word count in during the debate. But I think that he didn't get involved too much in the bickering, which I appreciate. He said it, you know, afterwards on Fox and Friends, he made a statement like that he's there to talk to people, like, even though it's a debate, he's there to talk to the American people and not to bicker back and forth on stage. So, you know, he got into it a little bit, but I think he stayed out of that kind of the mud a little bit, which I can appreciate.
Well, that can be good and bad because you're trying to, you know, obviously jockey for attention. And in this case, they're all trying to jockey for second place because Trump's way ahead in the polls. But, you know, people we were talking earlier, they went after Vivek and mostly left Ron DeSantis alone, which could mean that they find him irrelevant or they see him fading. I don't know. His people tried to spin it as there's nothing to go after him for. He's perfect.
But I was like, that is debatable.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a little disappointed that Trump wasn't there. I understand that he's got a huge lead in the poll and in all that, but
the poll,
I kind of always feel like if you're running for president, you should have to be at the debates. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? So, and then, you know, he's turning himself in today. He's got a lot. The man's got a lot going on.
Fair enough. I'm sure I would probably skip the debate, too.
So Florida schools are not without controversy, as you know, I think generally for different reasons than our schools are dealing with controversy. And there's this story today that's all over local news in Florida about black students at one particular school being sort of like sectioned off for a chat about their underperformance.
Yeah, so teachers and staff held a little assembly in order to try to, I guess, promote good grades and help kids understand that, like, incentivize, like, getting better grades, sure, basically, which can be a very innocent thing. And someone teacher had made a statement saying, like, you know, you want to think outside the box, but then you forget why there's a box there or something like that. So basically what ended up happening is they pulled kids to the front of the assembly and gave them praise and gift cards and stuff for getting good grades and improving their grades, while a section of kids who had poor grades, or like they have consecutively poor grades, were left in the back. And those students happened to be Black students in that school. So it definitely, I think, in concept, probably sounded great, but then once you kind of like are standing there in the assembly, it probably didn't feel so great for a lot of those kids.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think you're right. I think it's well intentioned. Then you realize, oh, well, this group of kids that has bad grades happen to all be Black. And I'm sure that the intent of it wasn't, oh, racism, single out the Black kids. But how is it being covered by the media in Miami?
Honestly, it's just being covered pretty factually, like just like what this is what happened, you know, because I think it's kind of everybody kind of sees it as, you know, obviously these teachers were just trying to do something to like promote, you know, to be involved in kids getting good grades. And everybody loves to get praise and understand, you know, and that's, it can be a huge incentive for kids when you're younger, is to have, you know, people you look up to praise you for the grades you get, and being recognized at such a young age. But, you know, that always sucks no matter what kind of kid gets singled out in the back. Like they obviously need some, you know, help with tutoring or whatever's happening. I don't know, but I don't know.
If that had been a story in Seattle, people would be losing their jobs. The governor would be having press conferences. It would have been a whole different level. This next story is very depressing. I don't mean to laugh. It's just like we have talked about Lolita, the whale that has been in captivity for some time in Miami, and all these efforts to free her back to the waters of Puget Sound. And she died.
She did. She died of renal failure just 5 days ago, 5 or 6 days ago. And it was super shocking. I guess they said she wasn't feeling well, which was kind of unknown to the public. So her death came like super shockingly. I mean, back in March, they agreed to allow the owner, I believe, of the Indiana Colts, he was the one that was going to fund the whole move of her back to her like natal waters in the Pacific Northwest. And it said that her mother and grandmother are still alive, swimming free out there. She was captured from the wild. So I think that's kind of what has always created a little bit of outrage with her, is that she just wasn't born in captivity and she was kept in a pretty small whale bowl, they call it, in comparison to a lot of the other like SeaWorlds and stuff. Her container was pretty small. And she does still have a living tank mate, a little dolphin that they are actively working to get her out of that tank and hopefully leave the Miami Seaquarium without any entertainment.
Is there a chance that she didn't want to go back to the wild and she knew it was coming?
I mean,
coming?
I think so. I mean, you know, I mean, she's a living creature and they're very smart. And I mean, you think about like an old farm dog that when they know it's their day, they just wander off and go kind of like into the sunset on their own terms. And perhaps that's what she wanted. I don't know. It's a whale. We can't speak to the whales.
Miranda's getting all deep with the whale thoughts. And she's like, I don't know. It's a whale.
But,
well, it's very sad.
I believe that if things were changing drastically in her tank, like they're preparing her to be moved, that kind of stuff at a whale that age probably didn't help either. So.
Well, and I do wonder after that long in captivity, how she would even have done in the wild, where she's got to go hunt for her, get her own food and all that stuff and compete for resources.
So the area that they were going to bring her to in the Salish Sea is like a very heavily monitored pod of whales. And there's some of her descendants that live in the pods that live in that area. So it's kind of referred to as like a reserve, I guess, for whales. But there's been like a couple other whales that's been released into the wild. One of them lived for a few years, like 5 or 6 years before getting pneumonia and dying. But I don't know. I guess everybody, like, if you think about it, what you'd want to do, would you want to just stay in your bowl until it was time to go or be free, like Free Willy?
I'd want to be free. Well, that's a sad story. All right, Miranda, we appreciate it.
Yes, no problem. Have a good week.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Poor Lolita. That's not the life she deserved. That's sad. I'm glad society has come around to the real problems with putting a whale in a tank, or a bowl, as Miranda kept saying. I don't think she was in a bowl, or was she?
Well, it's a tank. They said it was a little bit smaller than some of the other ones. But I agree, although I wasn't thrilled about the – she's been in that situation for so long to just throw her in the ocean and to be like, fend for yourself, or we don't have enough fish that they're having to eat seals that were probably her friends in the aquarium.
I know. Yeah,
I didn't like either option.
At that point, you've mm-hmm. screwed her life up so much, there's really no good option.
And the travel from Florida to here, that does not sound fun for a whale.
No. Poor Lolita. All right. Okay, coming up next, we'll get to your questions and comments from the live stream. I don't know if you guys are feeling super generous today, but we've got a lot of super chats. We are capitalists, after all, so if you pay, we will read your comment for you. So we'll have those coming up next. But first, I've been talking about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Nothing makes me happier than hearing and seeing your results. Ben and Leslie have been great examples. Husband-wife duo, they did the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan together. We took a picture together because combined we'd lost more than 100 pounds. That's like a Kardashian. I don't know. I saw a video that Kourtney Kardashian only weighs like 95 pounds, which is really small, but we lost a Kardashian combined. So just feeling good, especially right before my wedding. If you're wondering, is this the right plan for me? I would say if you do well with structure, it's going to be very good for you because you're told exactly what to do for 60 days. It worked well for me. You see the weight come off really quickly, and you can do this whole thing virtually. So you don't have to go into an office and get weighed and have it be super awkward every week or whatever it is. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation. You can ask Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team all the questions you have about whether the program will be right for you. All right, questions and comments. We missed a super chat yesterday at the end of the show from Bill Biz, our super chat daddy. too much. $20. Thanks, Bill. He said, without Trump, what's CNN to do? That's true. They love it. And that's I'm going to talk about an insanity check. If they're not unhinged about Trump already, after they get that mugshot, they'll never use another picture of Donald Trump. That'll be the only picture they ever use.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
100%. Oh. That'll be their new favorite picture.
Oh, yeah. I hope he smiles.
I think he'll smile.
Make it fun.
I don't know. Casey Leonard says, I like what Trump did when he was in office. Agree. Make America great again. I agree, make America great again. That being said, I think Trump comes with too much baggage. It would be 4 more years of political polarization. Yeah, and I think we're going to have 4 more years plus of political polarization regardless because of, I think the media is a big part in that. But if Trump were out of the picture, they'd move right on with the hate to whatever other Republican nominee it's going to be. I mean, Nicole, you were talking about Vivek, who yesterday I said his last name wrong. Today I can't say his first name.
Right.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Believe that's correct.
Okay. Is everybody happy? The chat lit up. They'll tell us if they're not. I'm trying my best, okay? It's a very hard name to say. But you were saying as soon as he was doing well in polls, the hate pieces from the network news were just, they exploded.
All of a sudden his name was everywhere and it was all negative.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, Biden goes to Maui and just stumbles all over himself, and CNN's like, Biden meets with
vows support.
It's like, okay.
Everyone was vows support. Vows support. Man. Okay.
Let me see. Joshua Sattler on my comments about Nikki Haley. So because she's the only woman on stage, she can talk over people and seem like she isn't being pushed around. She just sounds inconsiderate of other people's a lot of time. Everyone's inconsiderate of other people's a lot of time. Even Mike Pence, who's usually very stoic, was talking over people. So I don't think it's just Nikki Haley. I do think
she came out very aggressive, but I don't hold that against her. I actually think it worked to her benefit. I thought she came off very well. But But she did come off more aggressive than some. Some were joking around more, and yeah. she was not joking.
Well, I think because she hasn't done as well mm-hmm. as she wanted to, so I think she wanted to come out and make a point. But I'm not one that always cries sexism. But I do think when a woman on stage is like being aggressive, it is given different treatment by some sure. than when a man is aggressive, because that's just how they're supposed to be or whatever. So sure. I think that she didn't act any different than a lot of other people on stage when it came to...
I think she matched the mood, but stood out.
She matched the mood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crafty Grandma Crispy, Vivek says it's pronounced like cake. Vivek. Okay, now I know. Mandy says he was deflatus last night.
I think deflantis.
Oh, deflat. Deflatis.
Yeah, which he was flat. And I agree with you. He didn't really do anything yeah. that made it terrible
he
for
lived,
him.
Like right here.
He just didn't elevate himself too much. But yeah. And then the raise the hand thing after he looked around, that was... like. No, that's cowardice. All anybody's thinking about after yeah. that.
Either you own it or you don't own it.
Yeah.
But I also think with deflatis, yeah. I would like to see how he'd respond if he had been attacked more. You know, like Vivek was. Does he have a little fight in him, you know? Because he was living in this sort of monotone space. And sure. I don't think his answers were particularly bad. But, you know, you want to be a little lively. And Vivek had that going on. I think Nikki Haley had that going on. Tim Scott was terrible last night. Did not think he was good at all. Chris Christie's just awkward. I just don't like looking at him.
Again, shouldn't be up there. He was saying things to get an applause, and then it worked out to be booze instead. And I don't know. It just seemed terrible.
Yeah, I thought Mike Pence was fine. He's just very stilted. He's always sort of been that way. Mm-hmm. So to me, I guess I'm very judgmental of people's speaking capacity. Mm-hmm. So I'm very – that's really what I hone in on. And that's why I said the governor of North Dakota was so awkward for me to listen to. Mm-hmm. It was almost painful to my ears, because he was mm-hmm. really – you could tell he had – and having moderated a lot of debate. One thing that's very obvious is the practiced lines, right? You've rehearsed particular lines, and you could see his wheels turning about, okay, I'm trying to get to that line that's really good, that's going to sink, and then he'd mm-hmm. stumble over it, and it was really awkward. So, and that's the thing I like about DeSantis. DeSantis just talks. He's clearly smart. He knows how he feels about the issues. He doesn't sound stilted typically. And so I think that's good. I'd like to see a little more energy
yes.
from him. Yep. All right. Bob Larson. Hi, buddy. He said, the thing I like about Vivek is that he said he's the only one on stage who is not bought and paid for. Very true. Just give it time. Everyone in that sphere is bought and paid for eventually. All right. Matthew Cook says, yeah, I think Vivek won the debate. Not to say he took some legitimate hits, but overall, not a fan of his attack, saying the other candidates are corrupt and bought and paid for. Oh, look at these.
Yeah, I know. They go back and forth, right?
All right. Leland had two...
$2.
Are they both in there? Okay. Leland gave us two super chats today. First, he said, voting has consequences, which is true. On teens being taught everywhere, being taught in school, being taught by the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. that they're just fragile little delicate beings who just can't do anything wrong. Matthew says, if you hear about a crime with a stolen car, you can bet it's a Kia or Hyundai. Yeah, we talked about that with the sheriff, how their little TikTok video is going around about how to break into them. Although the thing I didn't bring up with the sheriff that I should have is Bob Ferguson. Remember what Bob Ferguson's response to all these car thefts was? To go after Kia and Hyundai.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For not mm-hmm. making their cars harder to break into. It's like, you do realize that we should be going after the people who are breaking the law by doing it.
Yep, that's not
it's
how he rolls.
It's crazy. H says, question, does the judge have the choice to jail a criminal or let them go? Wondering if they are forced to let them go because of Inslee progressive politicians. No, they have a choice. They have judicial discretion. I mean, there's certain rules where you try to set bail based on a variety of factors. Sheriff Sanders laid some of them out. You know, their criminal history, their likelihood to return to court. You know, are they from out of state, et cetera. So you try to weigh all of those things. But we do have a constitutional right to bail. And so I always want to be clear, as someone who's very, very beholden to the Constitution, we have a constitutional right to bail. That's why even in some cases where people murder someone in egregious fashion, you might have a $5 million bail. So the judge can set it somewhere where technically they got bail, you know, but it's so far out of the realm of what they can afford to be able to get out. So that's sort of some of the things that come into play.
On the other hand, though, I do think that their judges are human, too. They're citizens. And they have some political leaning, I'm sure. Yes. And do I think a lot of them sometimes get into the same, you know, let's let the criminals run the circus around here.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, and I don't know about this particular judge, but I think that...
They don't have to, but they're choosing.
Right. So they don't... Yeah, so that's a good point. So they can decide to use their judgment and mm-hmm. make a decision to say, oh, no bail. Go ahead. Go ahead, little youngster. Head right. back to your household.
You're just a little kiddo. Go home and play video yeah. games. Just yeah. stay away from your friends for the day.
And judicial discretion is important, you know, but I think it is being abused a lot in yes. the state by judges who are highly ideological, and that's also mm-hmm. not how the system is supposed to work. All right, Phil Dennis says, these legislators call these thieves harmless. They destroy lives financially and physically. For many, a car is the center of their lives, how they make a living. Some cannot afford full coverage. Very true. They lose their means of transportation. Insurance doesn't cover everything, even if they do have full coverage. My stolen truck that we had to recover ourselves sat for 9 months before the insurance settled on a shop. Then it was stolen from the shop and rammed into businesses by thieves. A total loss. The insurance won't pay the bill on the damage from the first theft. Thousands that I've lost. I'm sorry to hear that, but it's so true. And when you have Democrats in Olympia who talk about, you know, caring about the working class, caring about the poor, what do you think that these laws that you have, you know, either watered down or passed have done to the working class in the state? Who do you think that policies like this hurt the most? Of course it hurts the working class the most. You know, if someone who's wealthy gets a car stolen, like, fine, you know, they probably got good insurance, they're going to get it fixed, no big deal. But people who rely on that, you're absolutely right, Phil, it's spot on. So don't tell me you care about the working class. Mm-mm. And then you don't care if people are safe in their communities and their homes, and you don't care if they lose their property because it's just stuff. Okay, maybe it's just stuff to you, but to them it's stuff they worked very hard for, and in many instances, stuff they need to be able to run their lives and make a living. So shame on you. All right, Linda says, I'm impressed with this sheriff. Yeah, we like Sheriff Derek Sanders. He's great. He's great. Brandon's $5 super chat. We're free to make any choice we want. We are never free from the consequences of our choices. Unless you live in Washington State, then you're free from the consequences of your choices. On the gas guzzler, Andy says, gas chugging junkie. I'm still surprised how many people leave their vehicles unlocked in their garage. Yeah.
I never thought about that.
I never thought about that either.
Well, I do. What?
I think my car locks automatically if the keys aren't in it for a certain period of time. So I don't think that would be an issue. Maybe. But still, yeah.
Assuming you didn't leave your keys in the car.
But also, I would just assume. Do. Yeah, I would just assume that if you've already taken the step to break into my garage, there are so many other things in there that you could, like, if you wanted to sell something for money, you know, you take a leaf blower or whatever
but
it
I think
is.
Had that person had keys in the car, I bet that he would have just backed out right there.
Super weird.
I was very impressed with how clean and organized that garage was that he was in.
But also with the gas chugging thing, so he brought it with him. As I mentioned in the charging documents, they actually have pictures of the Ring camera in a backyard, and he's walking in with this poor girl. Can you imagine seeing that? He's got a ladder and a gas can.
Yeah, she saw that, and she hid in a closet. I'm like, I feel like I would have maybe jumped out of a window because she's I would have thought he was going to set the house on fire.
Right, but then he brought it in, and what did he do with it? He drank it.
I guess he got into their fridge. He opened a leftover pizza, ate some pizza and some chips. And then got into the car and started drinking the gas.
And chucking the gas, which I don't know. Is that something that junkies do? I can see sniffing it. Well, I'm not getting into what you can all do with gasoline to get a high, but Leland, is this a $5 super chat?
Yep.
Okay. On the mental health system, if they were going to intentionally destroy communities and society in general, would they do anything different? If the goal was for our politicians and our criminal justice system to intentionally destroy society, would they be doing anything different? That is profound, my friend. That is a profound question. Okay, good stuff today, guys. Oh, good stuff today to end the week. Let's end the week with a closing sanity check, shall we? Here's what I want to talk about today. So a couple hours from now, Donald Trump is going to turn himself in to a jail in Georgia. He's going to take a mugshot. And as I said earlier, you will see that mugshot every day for the rest of your lives on CNN. But I think the real thing that I just want everybody to keep in mind is the next 8 months are going to be insane. I really think that. I think that the moment Trump is arrested, the moment he gets that mugshot taken, is the true moment that this case against him starts. And I think it's only going to deepen the divisions in this country. And so I think for me, I know for Nicole, and I know for every single person who watches or listens to this show, that's the opposite of what we want, is more division in the country, more political polarization in the country. And so as easy as it is sometimes to fall into that and to fall in line with those divisions and those talking points and those feelings, I think that we need to fight against it with every ounce of our being and just take care of ourselves and take the responsibility seriously as individuals to try not to contribute to the division in our country that is only going to get worse between now and the 2024 election. So I know that's tough, but do what you can. Encourage your friends and family to do the same. We'll just fight against that division, that insanity in our own little part of the world. All right, that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We have on the Sunday show this week, on Sundays with Subscribers, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Rakedahl, is going to join us to talk about the state of our public education system. If you'd like to catch the interview, sign up for just $5 a month, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Sundays with Subscribers drops every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. All right, we'll see subscribers on Sunday. We'll see the rest of you back here on the live show on Monday.